Hi, I'm Brian, and welcome to the Optimist Roundtable Podcast, Episode 6, with all of the Larrikins.
Rather than I was like,
can you ping your phone from your watch?
That's cool.
It's so clever.
I'm still not getting one.
Neither. I don't know how to put this on song.
Just push the down button. All the way.
It'd be pretty funny because I was answering on the mid podcast.
Oh yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh well, if you're going to answer it mid podcast
when it lights up, so welcome, guys. Who we got? Let's do an introduction. KP,
Kanashi Pawada, physio KP. That's who I am.
That's who you
are. Cam Steptoe. I don't have any social media.
You do, but you just don't use it.
Jake.
Yeah, Jake Leslie, High Performance Manager at the Optimist Performance Center.
And Brian Robertson, host of the podcast, Optimist Health Group Physio. Welcome, guys. What do you want to talk about? I don't know. I'm not sure.
I want to talk about Cam's groin.
From fishing, huh?
Fishing. Got a pretty bruised groin. It's about that. I really want to talk about my groin. No, a few of the boys went fishing on Sunday. It's a pretty productive afternoon. We caught 10 bluefin tuna.
10 bluefin? You caught 10?
Caught 10 bluefin tuna. Biggest one would have been about 45, 50 kilos.
Did you catch the biggest one?
Did catch the biggest one. I feel like my groin caught the biggest one. Yeah, very tasty. I think everyone here's had pretty good feed of fish over the week.
It was delicious. Absolutely. What's going on in the world of physio and S&C and high performance?
Well, I think the biggest thing at the moment is your force vector. You've been harping on about that.
Yeah.
You've got everyone involved.
Yeah. Force vector rehab theory.
Like, we're coming into the season, like Bentley first game last weekend.
Yeah.
Q has got a couple of practice matches coming up in March. Same as Harlequins, Melbourne Uni. Melbourne Unicorns.
Cool. Yeah. Don't get that one wrong. No one wants to look after Melbourne Uni.
So I think like that's a big thing that's happening here at the moment.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're all looking after, we're all the head physio of either a semi-professional / progressive amateur teams, aren't we? And we've got rugby, KP rugby, Cam rugby, Jake AFL, myself soccer. So that'd be an interesting...
Football, Brian. Football.
Football. We're speaking to the Australian listeners who don't know. They think AFL is football.
Handball.
But yeah, that'll be interesting to see how this progresses over the year. I mean, the round table is just a talk crap amongst four of us. And maybe we'll give some good clinical knowledge going forwards. Speaking of that vector force rehab theory, any of you guys... read it? Seen the drafts?
Seen the drafts.
Yeah.
The drafts version 2?
Yeah.
Version 2.0?
Yeah.
I like it. I listened to Joey's podcast.
Yeah.
Joey is going to be a big thing for us, I think, the way he can document everything.
Yeah.
And the way he progresses everything. Like, we're really good here at being able to go A, B, C, D, but not document it, not put it in writing, not put it in place. I think Joey's really good at
systems.
Systematically. Like, I think I'm systematic, but I can't put it on pen and paper or here, this is what we do. It's
yeah.
Like, it's almost like an apprenticeship. I feel like I've done an apprenticeship by learning on the job, not like have it put in front of you.
Yeah.
Mm.
His podcast was incredible. Like, it was half an hour, but the way that he articulated his programs for, and I'm going to call him a young guy. How old is he? 25.
25, 26.
And he's got a master's in high performance from ACU, which that blew me away straight away. But then to see him and his ability to actually, you know, articulate his programs was incredible. So yeah, highly recommend listening to that podcast. That was released February 19th.
And who would have thought me being a good bloke giving someone a lift back would end up him coming to work for us?
Unreal.
Yeah, they found out yesterday. Kids never played soccer before.
No.
Joey?
Yeah.
No, never.
Did you know?
Just
no.
Football. Yeah, just football. You've never had anything to do with soccer.
Well, I played football as an AFL, played basketball, but
never played soccer.
Never
wow.
put on boots on a soccer pitch.
And here he is
yeah.
programming Preston
yeah.
Lions.
Yeah, jeez.
But that's the thing, like, you don't need to know, you don't need to have played a sport, like, yeah, it helps. But you've just got to have half a brain and look at it and figure it out and watch. Like, I think the biggest issue I have with people, especially school kids, like they'll play, like at Scotch, they'll play rugby, but they don't watch rugby.
Mm.
Like, I never played rugby, but I like watching rugby because
yeah.
I know that we work in it and you've got to have half an idea about it. And I like watching it.
Yeah.
Because it makes you understand, like, how can you work in a sport and not watch the intricate details, like you don't need to play.
No. But it's the same with all of our medic stuff out on the weekends. Like, you know, some of them are really good and attentive.
Yeah.
They watch.
Yeah.
Like, that's where you pick it
yeah.
up. Like, they're
yeah.
there and they're paying attention. You can see when something happens or you know when something's going to happen.
Mm.
Yeah.
But then it goes back on that second thing, like, just because someone played at a high level doesn't mean they are going to be really good in the back end stuff. Like,
yeah.
you see it in AFL a lot.
Mm.
Ex-players that are working at the club and you're like, oh, okay,
mm.
like, you're the best person for the job.
Doesn't mean they can coach or teach.
No, or, like, manage or football manage. Like, Adelaide was a perfect example.
Mm.
Adelaide Crows, football manager, was an ex-Adelaide player. Sacked him.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing a great job.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the results over the last couple of years for them, given the exceptional individual team that they've got, has not been great, hey? They missed finals.
They made a grand final, got pumped, and then didn't make finals.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I feel like in that vector force rehab theory, I try to explain a little bit that coaches, so when it comes to rehab from a rehab perspective, coaches have got so much more knowledge around the game that we need to start integrating and tapping into that. You don't need to play the game, but you can get that knowledge from the coach.
Mm.
Like, I feel like for you, Jake, understanding what a 5-star kicking rehab drill would be is very important for you to know, because then you know what movements your players that are going through rehab are going through. You understand the forces, you understand what movements are required.
Yeah, I think that, like, you need to have a training plan. So, like, I'm not there on a Thursday and my handover was X player can do warm up, they can do skills, no full ground drills, no high speed running.
Yeah.
No extra conditioning. That's going with the theory. I don't know what they were doing for training. I don't get given the training
plan.
That they'll be able to do skills as long as it's not full ground, because I don't want them to hit the high speed meters.
Yeah.
Because they're coming back from a quad strain.
Yeah. Whereas if they do like a small 50 meter drill, then
you're not expecting to get up to. But everyone's different. But that's an amateur football club.
Yeah.
At Bentley, you'd have a lot more. More understanding,
yeah,
of what you can and can't do, because the players are played like at Q, they're not paid to play.
Yeah.
So if someone gets injured, it's not great, but you're not losing money on it.
Yeah. Whereas at the semi-professional squad,
yeah,
like I get detailed session plans the day before training.
Yeah.
And that helps me integrate my rehab, and I've put all of that in the vector force rehab theory. Is an example of what is ideal at a semi-professional level. But yeah, it's interesting. What do you, rugby, right? Let's talk about rugby.
Mm-hmm.
And rugby in Victoria. How do you guys think that training plan and reintegration into training for an injured athlete will go this year?
It's really hard in the lower grades, because all of their coaching staff and that are volunteers.
Yeah.
And they don't plan sessions to the same extent that you're going to get working with state teams, where you get a run sheet. It's like drill A, 6 minutes, water. Drill B, 4 minutes, conditioning.
Yeah.
You know, when you go to community sport, you turn up and the coach is probably playing the same 4 drills that you did last week.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard to start integrating players back into that when it's all or nothing and you don't know what you're going to get. You might end up with 6 players from a team turn up.
Yeah.
It's not a forward pack. How do you pack a scrum?
Yeah.
How
so
do
you
reintegrate forwards
adjustments
to training? Yeah. But then you're not there most days.
Yeah.
You know, you might get 1 training session a week. So then they're completely unmonitored on the second training.
it's difficult.
What do you reckon, KB?
I think my thing is I just like people to play. You know what I mean? Like I never liked being injured. You know what I mean? Like, it's not an enjoyable process. Like, you just want to play. So I suppose going back to your session plans, I think it's really important to understand what it is that we're planning to do and the demands that that player is going to be under. And for me, I go through it and try to tick off, you know, we can do as much as we can in this session, but more importantly, have a plan for when you have to pull them out of something, you know what I mean? So it's not the best just sitting on a sideline and, you know, twiddling your thumbs. Like, there's a lot of other things we can be doing. But I suppose the question that I have for you guys is, how much emphasis do you guys then place back onto the coaches to assist with that rehab process? We all know there's the type of coach who'll be like, okay, you're injured, go stand on the sideline.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard when you're in a club where there's one or two coaches, but, you know, in rugby circles, for instance, is there a coach that can help with return to contact? But I'm not the best person to teach a tackle. I can tell you what to do, but I'm not the best person to teach it. You know, I'm not the best person to help you with a line out either. You know what I mean? But, you know, could coaches be playing a bigger role in that?
Well, that's the thing. There's always something you can do, like, at Q with limited availability. Like I think on Tuesday we had 75 men training. Four were injured. So it was just me. So I was like, oh, we'll do some straight line. Let's do some straight kicks. Like, keep you moving, keep you working as hard as the guys out there as we can. And like, I think the force vector thing will be really good for community level. And can we dumb it down even more to help like coaches if they don't have access to like medical help? It's like, okay, this is what we need to get you back. But I think it's going to work really well version 9. Version 9, I think we'll have it under control. That ability to have to like have something that you can benchmark yourself on. Like, that's, like I said, Joey's unreal at that. I'm okay. We're all okay at it. But I think the further we get into what we do, especially how big we're getting, we have to be able to give it to every single staff member that works for us.
And at the end of the day, like, my end goal is for this program to be able to be taken by a first year physio student who's doing volunteer role as a sports trainer at level division 4 club and looking after the reserves. And so all they need to do is take a printed part of one of the sub programs, so the rehab run as one example, have that printed, maybe laminated, take it to training, show the coaches, show the players, so that even if they're only there once a week, on the second session of the week, you can just communicate and say, hey, I think you should do level 4 of the rehab run tonight. And then if it's documented, it's printed out, it's laminated, it's there, the coaches have access to it, the player has access, and you literally just look at a central resource with easily transferable knowledge in that, saying, okay, do level 4 of the rehab run. That's where I would hope this vector force rehab theory goes out and improves that transition from clinical room to field-based. Because what I've heard over the last 10 years, in particular in Melbourne, from private practice physiotherapists who then send their kids to training, they say, train at 50% tonight. And that's not good enough. Like, what is 50%? Is 50% intensity of your running, or is it 50% of your game loads, or is it 50% of the normal amount of shots that you would take
and
at normal shooting?
Like, like 50%, like, if you go out and train at 50%, you're just shit for everyone else. Like, that's so annoying. I hate that.
But it's not accurate enough. 100% in every second drill? Is that 50%?
So, and that's what I want, and that's why this needs to be documented.
Not to play devil's advocate.
I
was once a first year physio student as well, right? We all were.
Jake wasn't.
I wasn't. The secret's out.
Don't tell Q.
But Is that probably then going into more, you know, the lack of knowledge that we're getting as physios in the early days? You know what I mean? Because I have to say, for me to start thinking like that, probably first came about through, you know, my excitement and, you know, sort of enjoyment around strength and conditioning principles.
And self-study, probably.
And self-study, you know, like, Cam, you're about to do your ASCO level one, you know what I mean? Like, and I wouldn't never claim myself to be a strength and conditioning coach, but at the end of the day, those are the principles that underpin that clinical reasoning,
yeah.
Right? Now, we know for a fact that there's people going into the workforce like this month for the first time who will probably see community level athletes, might be fortunate enough to even get higher level athletes who don't have that knowledge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's probably my excitement about the vector force rehab theory, is that those people will be upskilled in those principles, you know?
Yeah, cool.
I don't know.
I think my least thing is on it that everyone wants to work in elite sport until you realise how shit it is.
Yeah.
So I think that person in like that first year starting in a Division 4 club, it doesn't matter if you're a Division 4 club, you should treat it like it's elite level for the 4 to 6 hours you are there. The issue with that is that they have nothing to base their thought process on. So like what you've made is what comes out of the elite level that gives them some sort of like backing. It's like, oh well, this is probably what they do at the elite level, this is how well they do it. You don't know until you work in an elite level club. Like, you could know everything, listen to every podcast, but until you work at that elite level, even you guys, when you were like 26, 24, 26, whatever, you go into the elite level and you're like, wow, this is what they do.
Mm.
Oh, I never learned any of this.
Mm.
You get, you sink or swim.
Yeah.
If we have that ability to give it to students in their first, second year, they're going to come out and finish better.
Mm.
They're going to make the big time where they're at. And everyone starts somewhere. Like, you know, I was lucky enough to do a couple of internships at elite clubs, and then you drop back down to junior development where you've got no money and no time and no resources. If I had all this stuff back then, I probably would have made better decisions instead of like making up on the spot, going, this is the injury I've got, somehow I've got to get you through a 40 minute training session.
Mm.
I think if you've got this, you can learn quicker rather than trying to figure it out yourself.
And it's understandable, you know, through a physio degree, you can't really make it longer. I don't think you can make it longer and add in these principles.
Mm.
And so it's understandable, they learn what they learn in the physio degree, and that's what I learned as well.
Mm.
And the strength and conditioning side of things, you can't, I don't think you can add in the physiology and the anatomical detail that maybe physios go into, or the healing and rehab perspectives. Because that's, I'm not sure, that the ASCA course, I don't think you can integrate physiotherapy completely, because then what would happen is you would dilute the quality of both courses.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So what I've done with this, and the reason why, one of the reasons why I decided to release this for free to share to everyone, editable copies, no bullshit, here's a paywall, pay for this, is because vectors and forces are a common denominator between strength and conditioning and physiotherapy. And I feel like those principles can be applied to physios or to strength and conditioning coaches, because vectors are just physics, really. And at the end of the day, we're both experts in physics of human body and human movement. Or we should be.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a continual course, isn't
and
it?
Yeah, and like all physios, you're going to come across a runner, and you're going to come across an injured runner, because they're everywhere. How, like, if you don't have any understanding of strengthening, if you don't have any understanding of like a return to run for a marathon runner, everyone does half marathons now, like a 10k run, that's what everyone does as a fitness goal. How do you deal with that injured runner? Like, they come in and you're like, okay,
rest.
Don't run. Don't tell a runner.
Don't
tell run.
Don't. Yeah,
that's the worst idea. I know.
And ride a bike.
But like,
this is a good one.
This doesn't even have to apply to field-based people. This applies to, are you strong enough to carry 9 times your body weight through 10,000 steps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Use this slide that Brian's put out to build them back up. I think if you are in the allied health industry, you care, or most of us care, you should care enough to go out and learn more. Like, you're at uni, what, 16 hours a week, 18 hours a week, if you're doing an undergrad?
Yeah.
There's a lot of time to learn other things.
Yeah. That's where I somewhat disagree with Brian. You can't put any of this anymore into your physio degree.
Absolutely.
Like, I think there is definitely more place for that now. Like,
what would you all remove? Of the what would you remove?
Manual therapy. Like, the evidence is pointing away from manual therapy. Like, if exercise is more useful, we need to teach people how to prescribe effective exercise.
Okay,
then. 10 reps of
3 sets of 10.
Yeah, there we go. Oh. 3 sets of 10 is not effective exercise.
Mm.
It's not. It's usually not a quality load. It's not a quality pattern. Like, let's move away from that. Like, I'm pushing on your L3. Are you sure? Because there's a little bit extra. Like, oh, your hip flexor is really tight, or you need to go for a shit. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, I challenge you then. Why do exercise physiologists exist?
Because physio was
too slow to catch up. Yeah.
We didn't
own our place.
Effectively, if you remove manual therapy from physio, does that mean you just become
an
exercise physiologist?
I wouldn't say we have to remove all of our manual therapy. I just think that there's a place to add more of our exercise prescription.
Yeah.
It's a postgrad thing, though.
What I'm trying to push towards.
Yeah,
the undergrad is just, you learn so much in the undergrad that I feel like this is postgrad level, but it is self-directed postgrad learning. Like, there's a lot of postgrad courses that I think are a crock of shit.
Well, I mean, let's not.
And a waste of money.
Yeah.
And the universities are just raking it in to do those postgrads.
Yeah.
But if you do some more structured, self-directed learning, I feel like you probably need maybe a couple of years of experience.
And that
in
comes
order
back
to really
execute. Absolutely, because that comes back to Joey's an outlier. Joey's a massive outlier, being so young and being so switched on.
Yeah.
I didn't start really understanding until I was maybe 2 or 3 years out and in the force, like the workforce, and I'm like, I need to know all this extra stuff.
Yeah.
When you're working with athletes, when you're the buck stops with you, it's my same issue with teachers going in and teaching a teaching degree at 18, finishing at 22. How are you supposed to raise the next generation as a 22-year-old? You have no idea. You're still on your peaks. So that's a whole other thing, that like physios at 23, when you guys came out, you're in charge of getting someone better. And it's like, wow, I'm struggling to get over my hangover from the weekend.
Yeah.
So
we had a lecturer home, and he always told us that the only thing we learn at physio school is how not to hurt people.
Yeah.
We weren't good at fixing anything.
I'm still not good at it.
You're not effective. You're just there. You can help someone because you're listening to them.
Yeah, it's a guidance,
and
isn't it?
You can guide them.
Yeah.
But you think back on those first patients that you saw 9 years
wow.
ago.
How nervous were you?
And you're like,
oh.
They must have just been like, how the hell did I end up with this?
He must be the first year.
Yeah. First day on the job. Sweating bullets. Here we go.
At the end of the day, though, as a new grad, you still help people.
Oh, totally.
You may not help them as fast as maybe a 10-year qualified experienced practitioner helps them, but you still help them.
But you may also actually be better than that 10-year because you have a bit of empathy and you understand a few more things than the 10-year physio stuck in the manual therapy as well. So,
yeah, interesting.
But yeah, like it's like life coaches at 26. I see it all the time, and like, I'll help you build your business. Piss off, mate.
Yeah.
Instagram famous.
Yeah, I'm over here plotting away at 29, doing okay.
Yeah.
Piss off.
Oh, that's so true, isn't it?
I told you, I don't mind upsetting people.
This year is the year of
what do you call it?
Minimal fucks
not
given.
Not giving a fuck. Minimal fucks given. Or I'm choosing where to give my fucks more specifically this year.
Where are you taking your fucks away from?
I don't really care at the moment around what other people in the industry are doing. It let it upset me a lot last year, when people were publishing content, in particular social media, and what was being taught at universities, because obviously we've got a significant portion of students and we have massive access to what they're learning. And so I let that upset me a lot last year. And research as well. I feel like, you know, we've got the Physio Network, Adam Meekins has started his new publishing
clinical,
what is it?
Is that a podcast?
I think it's videos, a combination of videos, and you've got all these research collation companies coming together, and you know, you pay one off monthly fee.
Everyone's got an institute named after them.
Yeah.
So
all of that stuff, I feel like I'm trying to draw on my experience and the immediate people around me that I really trust and draw on their experience. And yes, physio and S&C is an evidence-based practice and we do need to use evidence-based, but I just feel like research is so slow that it's gone the complete opposite end of the scale, where people are publishing infographics that take one aspect out of 10 different parts of a really good study or a shit study. You know, one of the ones that I was massive on last year was the Escamilla study around ACL rehab, open chain loaded exercises. In that study, people were publishing so many different infographics that students were then picking up and taking as gospel, when really, if you drill down into it, in that study, they did studies on healthy knees. Nobody had had an ACL reconstruction. And so that process from research to then research translation to then social media influencers pissed me off so much. This year, I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to publish our own programs. You know, I feel like people need to not look at infographics because it's too summarized. And
but isn't that the benefit of them? I mean, you know, when I'm sitting there, you know, my morning routine, wake up, go to the bathroom, stop flicking through
Instagram. You know, see a new exercise or a kettlebell flicks up over your head, and you're like, I'm going to use that today with my next shoulder.
And already, as it is, I'm not a quick reader, so infographic, boom, there it is. I'm already using it with my next patient.
Yeah.
Don't care, you know what?
Someone that doesn't have a hip injury is getting this.
Then there's the little three dots and the more button, and KP's like, oh, I don't need to read it.
I've seen
the
video.
Picture tells 1,000 words.
There's a link in the description. No.
I don't actually want to read the study.
I'm just going to take the summarized topic.
I trust you.
You know what? And
that's what people do.
A lot of people do that.
Yep.
And right now, I don't care. I don't care. And all I'm going to try and do is try and influence the industry to think a little bit deeper and to maybe influence clinical reasoning through greater structures or greater, I don't know what you would call it, greater pillars or bases.
What safeguards do we have, though, in our industry to prevent? I mean, you know, I said to you the other day, I was up till 3 a.m. freaking trying to research my supposed FAI and arthritic hip and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you're literally reading through so much trash. Like,
literally 3 a.m.
Yeah, literally 3 a.m.
Man, go to bed. Get some sleep.
Right? Do some exercise, your hip will feel good.
What kind of exercise?
Exactly. I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much trash out there. Like, I feel, you know, and inadvertently, you know, there needs to be more emphasis on the people who are actually publishing this crap.
Yep.
I mean, they're coming out of our educational institutions. How the hell does that trash get onto my screen? I've got no idea.
Yeah.
Well, it's not published by the universities. It's published by a journal that's number one goal is to
sell
copies and memberships to people who will read it. So, like, you could sit, Brian could sit at his desk and write whatever he wanted. There's someone out there that will publish that.
Yeah.
Like, whether or not there's any evidence behind it, like, you know.
And that comes back to, like, charging for your stuff and not charging.
Yeah.
You think if someone's charging you $100 that it's going to be correct. Or it's going to be the best. It's not necessarily.
Yeah.
And that's why, like I said in my podcast, I'll, like, anyone asks me anything, I'll tell them my exact thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Like, ask me a question, I'll be like, oh, this is what I think and this is why. You could charge someone $50 for that.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're making, like, you're not correct. So, yeah. Like, I think you give away all your best stuff for free. It's how you implement it and it's how you plan an attack and it's how it changes. So, like, every day is fluid. This might not work today, but our full spectre thing will work 9 times out of 10, but the one time it doesn't work, don't come yell at us that it didn't work. Use your clinical reasoning and figure out why it didn't work and change it.
Gave you an editable copy of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Make changes. Make it fit what your skill set is. Don't try and do things you
every day is different because there's variables. Like a guy coming to the gym today, he's like, my ass is sore, and we're like, oh, I do mobility, I'm going to drop everything down just to one set today because you've had a big week. Uneducated person would have come in and just completed what they were told to do.
Yeah.
And made it worse.
Yeah. And it's interesting, the free versus paid thing. You know, I feel like when there's money involved from the free aspect, from the paid aspect of a course or buying a program or buying a protocol, even if it's $5, right? There is then a financial bias that becomes involved that starts to cloud things. And whoever the person is creating that program or sharing that program, they have alternative motives. At the end of the day, even if it's only 5% financial, they have alternative motives to sell this program. And so 100% of the idea of a program is not about improving the industry or changing mindsets or making people think more from a clinical reasoning perspective. And that, you know, KP, you're saying, how do you make people accountable? I feel like people just need to share more and people need to stop being so fucking guarded and protective and territorial. You know, we've got, there's probably 10 physios in Richmond.
Oh, easily.
We've not spoken to any of them because they're all so territorial and there's more than enough patients to go around. Right, I know
there's
business
8 billion
is hard.
People in the world.
I know there's
you up to 8.
Business is hard. I understand that. I completely understand that. But and I've put this in the emails out to all the, everyone who got the vector theory draft this week, is that a rising tide will float all ships, and so by putting stuff out for free, opens things up to feedback. And I want people to come to me and go, Brian, this part of your vector rehab theory is shit. I want people to go and I'll ask them why. And I'll say, teach me.
Well, there's
why,
the issue, because people are like, that was shit. And it's like, but you haven't got a reasoning why it's shit.
Yeah.
You haven't come with a,
but you haven't come with a solution.
Help me. Like,
yeah,
come
yeah.
with a solution. Like,
cool.
One to one.
Great
it's
problem.
Shit, but
great problem. What's the solution?
And so I feel like, to answer your question, KP, in a very roundabout way, there's a lot of trash and a lot of shit out there because in our Western society, we're not blunt enough. There's not enough radical candor.
There it is. You ought to come out.
Yeah.
People.
Brian,
will
can you please explain
this
to the listeners what that is?
Radical candor is just upfront honesty, immediate honesty. And so I'll give you one good example, right? I was listening to a podcast yesterday about a guy who had traveled all around the world. He was actually the CEO of Gear Patrol, the online publishing platform. And he said that his favorite trip was to Russia because in Russia, people are very honest and it comes across as very blunt. He said that he went on a date with a Russian chick. And within the first 2 minutes, she said, what you just said was bullshit. And then within the first 5 minutes, the chick said, you're being an asshole, stop it. Anyway, that's just the way that the Russians are. And they call bullshit out when they see it. And it's not being disrespectful. It's just calling bullshit out when you see it. I feel like in our Western culture, there's all these fake niceties. There's politeness. There's... you don't get true, deep, and meaningful relationships, and in particular around work colleagues, when you're just always nice all the time.
You're nice for the night.
And I mean, I've worked with lots of people that there's just politeness and niceties, but I feel like in high performing teams, which is obviously what we're trying to create, there's always this honesty and openness and bluntness and radical candor, which happens, and that I feel like answers your question, is that there's so much bullshit and so much trash out there because no one will pull them up on it, especially when there's financial journals publishing things. People go, that is absolute crap, but people will pay for it.
People are paying for it,
so they won't do anything about it.
But I think there's a lot of pseudo chiefs.
Yeah?
You know what pseudo chiefs are?
Explain.
So a lot of people who think they're leaders, but they're actually not leaders. You know what I mean? Like, going to what you're saying, like, I think it's one thing to call out someone's bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, man, I can walk down the street and fucking call out shit on everybody. You know what I mean? I've been here, I'm coming up to my 1 year, and the truth is about to start coming out about a lot of people.
I can't wait.
But at the end of the
probation period, over. The real KP comes out.
But I think if you're going to call out someone's bullshit, you know what I mean? You've got to prepare to put, you've got to be prepared to put yourself in a position of leadership. And that means calling people out on their bullshit, but also then explaining why that's bullshit, explaining, okay, a different opinion. You know what I mean? Like, okay, that's absolutely crap because of X, Y, Z, and this is what I believe is the best way. And that's the only way we can progress.
It's called not trolling.
Trolling.
Trolling is saying, oh, that's shit, you're shit, this is shit. Yeah. Don't go to that person, they're shit. It's like, well, you've given nothing. I could be shit for someone, but someone else goes and does the exact same with a different person who's not my personality and gets great results. The same thing, I got bad results.
But in saying that, I also think there's a responsibility on those people calling out the bullshit to take a step back and try and understand why that person is doing what they're doing.
Yeah,
right?
Tunnel vision. Because
at the end of the day, I can walk into your session, I see you doing an exercise,
context.
And I'm thinking, what the frick is Jake doing right now?
Context,
you know what I mean?
Everything's
but
contextual.
That person might not have slept for 2 hours, you know what I mean? For only 2 hours that day, and all of a sudden you're trying to regress them, and away we go. Like, I don't know.
Context.
Yeah.
Context, mate. All context.
But
Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
Very good call.
And some people don't have the knowledge to know that they're fucking something up. Like, if someone thinks what they're doing is the best thing they've got, and that's the best option for them on the day,
I've got
and then turns out...
Of this.
Yeah, me too. Brian went on holiday, and I covered Bentley for him. Turn up first day, everyone's like, the boys are all sore, fix them. I'm like, why are they sore? And they'd had them running shuttles, like 1,000 metres, 1,080 metres, 1,060 metres, 1,040 metres. I was like, yep, you just blew them all out of the water on like a Monday, and they're really sore on Wednesday. Of course they are.
Yeah.
None of them had run
that
far,
that
fast.
Who'd coach back here, like who'd play back in the 90s, and it's like, that's what he did in the 90s.
Yeah, and
I
it's like
more resilient back then.
Oh,
those were the days.
I did it.
Yeah, they were the days.
You know, we worked you really hard on Monday, and I used to play, I know what it's like to work hard. It's like, yeah, but if we do it again, you're increasing your risk of blowing someone up. Let's be smart about it and just do a light session.
Which
by Friday, when they had a game, they're all back to normal.
And the thing that really impressed me was, you took the responsibility and the ownership to explain that to the coaching staff.
You can't just blow up at them and not give them a reason
yeah.
and an example of what to do better.
But you explained why, didn't you? You explained
but you
the reason.
Explain why.
And that's what I think we need more of.
That's why we call him Chief Kim.
Chief Kim.
Chief
Kim. We don't need pseudo chiefs. We need real chiefs.
When have we started calling you Chief Kim?
No,
I'll stand to move on. I'll be across the road for 2 hours.
Yeah. What's your example?
Oh, I just think that people overcomplicate things. So, like, my old housemate Caleb messaged me yesterday. He goes, do you think for boxing, if I got someone to hold their breath and did as many punches as they could, would that be a good technique for fitness? And I just replied back. I was like, this is called low-hanging fruit, mate. Maybe teach them to breathe first. I was like, what are you doing? Like, I won't say he's smart, but he's smart enough.
At what point,
he won't listen to this, so I don't care.
But at what point is anyone who's boxing having to box holding their breath?
Who's
not applicable.
More than 6 punches in a fight?
But it's not applicable to. It's not applicable to this sport.
I don't know where he was going.
So why would you do it?
I don't know. And I don't. I think he was expecting me to write back. Yeah, that sounds good. Mate, that sounds dumb.
At least he's testing his boundaries. You know, I think he's already
tried it though. That's why.
Caleb, stop.
How's your thoracic rotation going to go when you're holding your breath? All the power of your punch gone.
But this is a thing with education levels, right? And baseline levels of knowledge.
Yeah.
Personal trainers, you can become a personal trainer after doing, what's the shortest course?
You just do a set three. It took me 3 months.
3 months.
No, I wasn't working really hard back in 2008 or 2009.
Still in Wongaretta in 2008?
I was in Orange.
Orange, yeah.
Way better than that.
Orange, the great town.
You've been there?
No, many times.
I have never been to Orange.
I've got a couple of friends from Orange. One of them's there at the moment, actually.
Somehow we've gone on a basketball trip to Bathurst.
You know it.
And we ended up at Orange.
Why?
At like 4 hours.
4 a.m. in the
Sorry,
Orange
mate,
KFC.
This is not a time for that story. Back on track.
I know we marked the podcast as explicit. I can only imagine what happens at Orange at 4 o'clock.
Nothing's open at 4 a.m.
No, that's where you get the dodgy places, mate.
No.
Well then.
What else is going on? You guys got anything you're looking forward to?
Oh.
This better be good. That was a big one.
Baby Expo this weekend.
Ooh.
Oh!
Have you been to Baby... I went to Baby Bunting yesterday.
Did you?
It's so much easier when you've actually got a kid.
When you got a kid.
Oh, really?
Don't go before a kid.
Really?
It's just... There's so many things.
You just burst his bubble
yeah,
so bad.
Like,
you're excited, aren't you?
I think where they're carefree, just sort of... Oh, yeah, that'll do as we go. Just figure it out.
KP's going to be a dad.
Yeah.
That's very
June?
Exciting, mate.
July.
Just before rugby grand final. That's right, Harlequins won't need to anyway. They won't be there.
Is that why he jumped clubs to a team?
Yeah.
Hey, this is a sensitive topic. That was a business decision.
What else we got? Me and Brian are going to do a 24-hour ski erg challenge.
I'm going to start training.
When are we getting a ski erg for the gym? You've got a month.
Yeah, we've got a month.
Wait, what day is it?
The 14th.
Okay. Yeah, I've got less than a month. Shit.
What's the ski jump? Talk to us. What's the ski
So a mate of mine owns a gym doing a 24-hour ski erg, concept ski erg. Teams of four, keep it rolling. It's for charity for Just Be Nice Project. So it's like youth, disadvantage, homelessness.
Mm.
So we're quite good. Like we've been raising 10 grand. I think nowadays you've got to do charities. Have got to actually, like, you can't just ask for money. You've got to, you know, put a commitment in and do something that people are like, wow, well done. Like, I was on the Silver Lining ride. The first one I went on as a staff, we rode from Adelaide to Melbourne.
Jeez.
And then the second one I actually rode, I got sucked into riding, which I enjoyed. And we rode from Canberra to Melbourne.
Oh.
And like, I think getting the message across rather than just asking for money.
Yeah.
Jake, I'm scared, mate. So yesterday at the pit where this is happening, they had a video shoot, and I was busy, so I couldn't make it. I haven't done a ski erg ever. 3 weeks. Anyway, they took a photo at the end of the session.
Oh, they all had their shirts off.
Everyone had their shirts off, and everyone's got ripping six packs. And here's me. So
mate, it's an endurance event. You need to have a ripping six pack.
You know, I would say the more body fat
those endurance swimmers who are swimming the channel and stuff like that.
They look like me.
They're podgy, man. They
okay,
look like you.
Sweet.
All
right. So
they look like me, you, and KP.
But you just need to keep it rolling. Like, it's not...
We're not trying. So I think the record is like 250 or 260 Ks in the 24-hour period. We won't be going near that.
Okay.
So how long do you have to do each...
Yeah, what are we... What's
I'll,
our
I'll
team?
Work it out. I'll work it out.
But is it like 15-minute blocks? So
well,
four of you doing 15 minutes
well,
every
the
hour?
That was the theory to start with. And then overnight, like
we're
it's 8 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So overnight, then we're going to like knock in some 40-minute stints so you can get a sleep.
Yeah.
And my mate who's running at Clay goes, sleep? Nah.
Yeah.
Bit crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, we're just going to do 10 minutes each and just roll through for the 24 hours.
Too much
free
workout.
Yeah, I reckon that on off and like...
Yeah.
If you haven't,
and even within a 15-minute time frame, like you can go, not bad.
So
break
I
I can get a
1 kilometer in like 3.5 minutes, like going at a bit of a pace.
Yeah.
Like I've done a few 20-minute stints where I've knocked off like 5.5 k's or something.
Yeah.
Is there a distance you have to achieve in each of your top? So you could literally just be standing
it's
there.
Like,
going,
it's me going, look, I've got Brian. If Brian can do this, you can donate $10.
and that's
it's an awareness thing.
If,
and like,
if I can do this,
yeah.
But and it comes back to Brian said to me, the only reason I've said yes, one is because I need something to train for.
Yeah.
Which he hasn't trained for.
Which he has nothing.
Not yet.
Yeah,
but
I
know I've got 4 weeks.
But
I'm
the same. Like, I've trained a little bit more now that I've got something to train for. Like,
yeah.
I'm throwing myself in the deep end. I'm going to do a marathon at the end of the year. I'm going to jump back into some triathlons, like an Ironman at the end of 2022
That's
or something.
Cool.
But if you don't have something to train for, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like,
I need that motivation.
Yeah.
I need something looking for. Like, the end of last year was Mount Kilimanjaro. And that was Yeah, that was the most exercise I've ever done. Across a consistent 6 month block,
and that comes back
yeah.
to like that comes back to us being what we are. Like KP is now trying to get his hip sorted. Cam probably wants to get fit for fishing.
Mate,
if you keep catching big
50 kilo,
you'll be strong.
Tuners,
they're
that's
just
awesome.
They're not always there. So
yeah. So were you lucky or was it just skill?
Oh, we got lucky.
Yeah.
The boat went out in the morning and they caught one squid.
That's
and
it.
We saw the boys in the car park that had been on that trip. And they were like, yeah, we got nothing. Like, five guys had paid $100 each to be on this boat, looking like a pack of sad guys. And we're like, oh no, not going to catch anything. Not going to catch anything. We got out of Port Phillip Bay and like threw a lure off the back. And 30 seconds later, there was like tuna on it.
That's life,
man. 3 minutes later.
That's life.
3 minutes later, it's in the back of the boat. And we're like, we're
okay.
on. Here we go.
What else is going on?
What day is it? Friday.
Friday morning. How's the Long Blacks?
I was gonna say this is the
Long Black Club, but I'm drinking a latte.
And KP had a mocha.
Was it actually a mocha?
Yeah.
Are you not drinking normal coffee anymore?
No, he's never drunk.
I've never
drunk.
Haven't you?
Yeah.
Are you
always
from Sydney?
Mocha.
Yeah, you're from Sydney.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it has everything to do with it.
Just the chocolate man.
What's been a challenge that you guys have faced recently, or any challenges you feel like you may face coming up in the next couple of weeks?
Energy levels.
Mm. Is that because
you sleeping?
Pregnant wife and
no.
Getting
into
too
season.
Much work.
Getting into season.
What's going on at the Rebels Academy, mate?
Rebels Academy. Oh, they've got a pretty good session this Saturday.
Yeah.
They're going to, I forget what the gym is, but it's one of those Muay Thai.
Oh, cool.
They're going to learn a bit of sparring. And
do some rolling.
Yeah. They'll do a few things in there, so they're looking forward to that.
That's one thing that I really like to see. Is a couple of tight head props trying to do some Muay Thai.
There's some big boys.
Just trying to like learn how to land and not just
like
that's what they do. They just fall flat.
Big boys. There's some big boys in there. Makes me nervous when I'm holding a tackle bag.
And you're not small either, mate.
No, I've been losing some weight.
You know what? It's noticeable.
I'm trying.
Especially in the face.
I know.
Shredding.
I know.
What have you lost? Like 7 or 8 kilos?
Six.
Six.
Yeah.
In the face.
Good work.
What about you, Jake?
Coming up. Just at that time of the year again.
Yeah.
Like practice games start, so Saturdays are taken up. Sundays are dealing with everyone who gets hurt.
Yeah.
Lots going on in the gym. I will start organising how to train in season.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to educate people that you can lift weights Tuesday morning before you train Tuesday night.
This time last year, we had the gym as an empty shell.
Yep.
Yeah.
Really, was it 12 months ago?
Yeah.
Wow. The trap bars haven't got any nicer on your hands.
Yeah. You said they were going to soften them.
I was wrong. I didn't realise I was lying.
To be fair, we could get more people to use them and then it might fill up with skin.
Oh, yeah. But is that how they soften?
No.
No. But it might fill up the gaps.
Chalk.
No.
No.
File.
I'm So it's been a big 12 months.
Talk to me about equipment, right? So I know that everyone's excited. Well, KP, I'm not sure if you know, the Rep 1 sensors.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
VB2.
Yeah, I think training in season, about getting like your minimum dose, a minimum stimulus without making you sore, like all the research that's come out. So Dr. Brian Mann and Dan Baker, I think, is a doctorate as well, maybe. They work a lot on velocity-based training, like moving the barbell at over 0.6 metres a second will elicit enough of a stimulus to keep you being fast and powerful in season. The only way you can measure it accurately is by these velocity-based training systems. Myself and Cameron have bought a Rep 1, personally, which is sort of like you hook it to the barbell, it measures the speed of the barbell, the velocity of the barbell.
Path of the barbell,
really cool. They've basically designed it themselves. At the moment, the only way, like when I'm working with the rowers, is I want to hear that bar rattle. So the plates are on there and they're moving quick enough that you hear the bar rattle. I'm using that or just going by sight at the moment, which isn't as accurate, so it's not best practice. Mm-hmm. But that's coming. I hope they get to us by April. That's the thought.
Hopefully we can tag them in this.
And yeah, we'll tag them in this and speed them up.
What's the theory? It's that if your bar speed drops on the latter reps, then you're too fatigued.
So it's a central nervous system thing. It's like you're not moving quick enough. You're working at different stimulus. Like during the year, we want to put on size, so you slow down your movements, so time and attention. This one is like a central nervous system. Let's stimulate it without making you sore. Because you just know, like, I don't know about you guys, but training in footy seasons, like, it's been a long time since I played sport, but I couldn't walk on a Monday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you have to alter your program.
But, yeah, you've got to alter your program, but it doesn't mean that you only do one strength session a week, because during the year, ideally, you should maintain your fitness, if not get fitter, you know, match intensity sort of situation, but you lose strength, power, speed. If you don't train those qualities, you're going to lose them. So the art of it is, how much can you do that's going to maintain those qualities? And it's about educating.
I'm not sure I understand.
Go away, Siri.
Siri doesn't understand it. I feel like I don't sometimes. Yeah. But
continual learning.
But it's like every week we send out a wellness questionnaire to our members and our athletes. And it's like, how are you feeling? What's going to get away program this week? Are you injured? I hurt my shoulder on the weekend. All right, well, Monday's program we may have to change up a little bit. Are you booked in for physio? What is the diagnosis? With this sort of velocity based training, we can still move things fast, you can still get a workout, you're not going to be sore to train. I think back in the day, I used to do Monday, I'd do some upper body stuff, and Friday I'd do upper body stuff, Tuesday, Wednesday I'd try and do some legs. It's 9 years ago when I was actually playing sport.
Yeah.
So it's all changed now. I was discussing with the boys, I'm like, why don't you train Tuesday morning in the gym and then Tuesday night training, have Wednesday off? Oh, no, I don't like being sore. No, you don't necessarily have to be sore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You've got 9 hours to recover. Like, elite sportsmen do a speed session, have 2 hours off, do a skill session. As long as you eat and hydrate and do what you're supposed to do, it's probably going to be beneficial you sleep in the next morning. So,
yeah, cool.
So that's what's coming up, this proper having actual community-based athletes and people that want to continue to train. We're going to try and get them to train 2 to 3 times a week.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge that's coming up.
What I'm really passionate about, and I know that I've shared this with you guys, is females training at the same level and just giving them access to the equipment, because typically what you see, an academy squad at Rebels, for example, the differences over the last 5 years of what the males get access to, and this isn't just at the Rebels,
this is everywhere.
Rep teams and maybe, you know, going into semi-professional leagues. The males have always had access to gyms and access to programs like this, but the females haven't.
What's the culture, men with weights?
Yeah.
We probably have more female footballers than male footballers across the road.
Yeah.
I just think because of our connection with Q, and they are training the house down. Mm.
Q and Olds, yeah.
They will gradually... It becomes more and more standard.
Mm. Mm.
I think I find with girls that you've got to push them a little bit to put more weight on the bar, whereas boys, you've got to like pull that back. That was shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's moving really badly. That's poor. Girls are the opposite. It's like, go heavy. They're like, oh, are you sure? It's like, I've been trying to put on size for 10 years. Look at me.
Mm.
So think it's just a culture thing. Mm. But yeah, I'm big on like girls lifting weights.
Yeah. But what do we do? What do we do? I mean, what I mean by what we do is a lot of my patients who are female find the gym a very intimidating place.
Oh, absolutely.
Whereas I find over across the road, like we don't have that.
Across the road's different.
What is it across the road that...
We don't have your meatheads.
Yeah.
We don't have...
There's no mirrors.
Everyone's... There's so many different people. Like you look at a rehab group and then the athletes training.
Mm.
You got people from all sorts training with their knee rehab and then you've got all sorts of doing their programs. I just think you go into a gym like Fitness First and it's a PT is trying to get you to train with them because they need to make money and they're going to charge you $100 an hour and then they make you feel bad if you're not. They're trying to sell you supplements. I'm not trying to sell you anything across the road. I'm like, this is what you should be doing for your sport. This is going to make your sport better. This is going to make you better at your sport.
Mm.
It's not even that. Like, and then we've got people, I'm like, this is what we're going to do because you want to lose weight, you want to get stronger. This is what you're going to do.
Mm.
Everything comes back to, like, I think it's mental health. Like, if you... I hate going into gyms. Like, I hate going into just general gyms. Like, I worked in one for 2.5 years, hated it. I just dislike the vibe and the environment. Some are fine, but I think people like training together with similar goals. But yeah, I think across the road we're trying to create an environment that's not like that.
Mm.
It's a little bit more, we're trying to help you, we're not going to sell you shit you don't need.
Yeah.
Mm.
We're not, if you don't come for 2 weeks, I'll notice that and be like, hey, where have you been? I'm then going to give you back 2 weeks of your membership, like pause your membership and come back in, because I'm not going to charge you while you're not here.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, that's not the point. And that's why I like sending out the wellness thing on a Saturday arvo. Fill it in, we know what's coming in for the week.
Yeah.
But that's what I think it is. Like, it's just the environment that big gyms create. It's money grab.
But it's not even just big gyms. Like, even little gyms will have individuals that make the space uncomfortable for people.
Yeah.
Like, I go to a little gym up near my place, and like the other day I was in there, and this guy walks in, and he's got all his bags and stuff, and there's lockers. Like, there's a place to put all your stuff, and he just walks in and starts dumping his bags all around a squat rack and a bench. And I'm like, you've just taken up almost a third of the floor with all of your stuff, making a big scene about, oh, I'm getting into my bench press.
And then we made a heap of noise. And,
like, just starts, like, rattling around. And I was just like,
did you give him a bit of cheek
cam? I'm so glad I'm leaving.
Yeah.
See ya.
I look at that and I'm like, mate, you're not, like, no one cares.
Mate, he had a tripod so that he could film himself. Like,
maybe he's just analysing his technique.
That I don't mind, like people filming things, but you know, have some self reflection on there are other people there,
and
you are probably a flog.
You're a 40 something, maybe even
50
something.
I encourage people to film big lifts like deadlifts, squats. Film it, send it to me, I'll critique it. I used to hate it when I was in my early 20s. Why are people filming themselves? I look at it now like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. Like, people have no idea, people can't move. So that's my thought on it. But yeah, that's the in-season training model. Again, it's fluid. Someone asked me the other day, how many sets of Nordic should I do? I was like, well, it depends. And then I left it there and I'm like, come back with some more information. But yeah, that's what I've got coming up. And everyone else is the same. Like, we're going to be so busy in clinic with dealing with injuries and hopefully getting people right.
Anything from you guys? Nah.
No.
Pretty happy. Good first hour chat, round table.
I've dobbed in Kieran and Drummo to come over and have to talk to you after Joey's.
Yeah.
Kieran hasn't replied back.
that's just a sign that he's either scared or... Yeah. No, it was just so good. It was excellent. What do you guys want to see on this podcast? Like, I know that we've talked for an hour here around a round table, and who knows who will listen. It's just nice for us to get together and talk shit.
I was thinking the other day, like, do we do a round table and film it? Or do we go, once we get a bit of traction, do we go Instagram live and then start taking questions?
Yes!
Like, do we go Facebook, Instagram live and start taking questions?
Yeah.
I reckon the first 10, we wouldn't get anyone, but I reckon if we filmed it, you'd be able to see some funny things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think maybe the next round table will set up a camera and film
okay.
it.
Yeah.
Not go live, but put it on YouTube.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
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 And it's interesting to see.
We might
who
need to get a bit of setup. Maybe we could go across the road and put a microphone on the table at the Spritty.
Jeez,
that's a pub.
This is long black territory, and now we're going to be pushing into beer territory. Yeah, that'll be.
I reckon they're open at 10 on a Friday.
Oh. What do you reckon? What do you guys want to see or hear on the next podcast? Or what do you guys want to talk about? Because you guys will be on the podcast again.
We're really good.
Yeah.
It's not one and done,
yeah.
Mate.
No.
It's a full-time
job.
Yeah,
I've given all of myself already.
I've updated my LinkedIn. Professional podcaster.
Mate, Joe Rogan is on like $300 million a year on his podcast.
Seriously?
Like, that's what they reckon someone's going to pay him to have exclusive rights.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, but he publishes like three a day some days.
That's all he does.
Yeah, he's a podcaster.
He literally just sit there and record podcasts.
Talks to
and
people,
go to fights.
Yeah, and goes to fights. He was nobody 8 years ago.
Oh, but no, that's a lie. He was like the host of Fear Factor.
Like, that's what I mean. But in terms of things, like, so
yeah.
give it 3 years and Brian will not do any clinical work except ACL, NSAID, and podcasting.
I'd like that. That would be great. That would be really good.
So they're not going to do his middle stage.
Yeah, any closing comments of what you want to see? What you think would interest people to hear?
Let's get some external guests.
Yeah.
It was hard enough to get us all four of us together.
I know.
True.
It's pretty easy for me.
Do we? Do you Skype someone in?
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
I think that's what
we
do.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. Adam Meekins next then.
Yeah.
Tag him in this.
Awesome.
We all know how he feels about manual therapy.
Yeah.
Good job. Cool, guys. Thanks very much for the hour of chit chat. Next one, probably in a month or maybe 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Depends on, yeah.
2 weeks.
Shout out to all my followers.
Yeah.
Busy OKB.
Busy OKB. What's yours, Cam?
Busy OKB.
Good stuff.
Bye, Mum.
Thanks, gents.
Love you.